This session is brought to you by Zone 14 Coaching, a company built by coaches for coaches. If you ever walked off the pitch after training and thought, did this session actually land the way I wanted it to? This is exactly what Zone 14 was built to help with. Their next-gen journals help coaches plan sessions for their players, reflect on what worked, and track development throughout the season. It's a powerful resource built around intentional coaching, backed by neuroscience, designed to bring real structure to the training process. You can check them out at zone14coaching.com and use the code CBTP for 20% off. And if you are a coach or a club and want everyone working from the same system, reach out through their website to learn more about team and club discounts.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order. I want to tell you about something I've used and I truly believe in. Replayer. It's a sideline camera built for youth sports. Just set it up, hit record, and it captures the entire game automatically. No chasing the ball, no holding your phone, just hands-free, stress-free recording. The in-game tagging is one of my favorite features. One tap, and you can mark a big goal, ankle-breaking moves, or a clutch tackle. Then pull those clips for later for review, highlights, or social media. And the live streaming's next level. A buddy of mine actually watched his son's game while flying cross country at 30,000 feet. That blew me away. If you're a parent or coach at the field every weekend, Replayer is a game changer. Head to replayer.com. That's R-E-E-P-L-A-Y-E-R.com. And I think you'll be amazed.
Hello and welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. Today I am joined by Aaron Medina from Alpha Forms Residency. We dig into what real player development actually looks like beyond the team, beyond the results, and into how we build better players and better people. This one matters for players, parents, and coaches, trying to understand where the game is going. Let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
My name is Aaron Medina. I am the COO of Forms Residency and Forms Academy. Forms Residency is a private school for soccer, local to the area out of two locations. And Forms Academy has been around as one of the youth soccer organizations in the market for a very long time.
So let's start off with your background, because at the end of the day, everyone who I talk to is involved in soccer in some way. So where did your soccer journey begin and how did you get into this beautiful game?
I grew up in Canada, so mine's a little bit more unique. I think my parents recognized that I maybe had a little bit more of a mind for the game when I was a few years old, 3, 4. And instead of picking butterflies off the grass, I was the one that wanted to run through the pack and score the goals. And so that's where it began, and grew up playing in Canada my entire life. Had some really great coaches that impacted me in terms of my journey. That really helped me get to a high level very, very quickly. I think everybody can remember like one coach that made a massive difference. Mine was a gentleman named Paul Schultz, and he just really took me under his wing and helped me through my process, helped me get set up with the training that I needed. And so at a young age, I made the national team at 14 in Canada, played for, gosh, 4 or 5 different national teams all the way through high school. So not just the youth national teams, but all the way on up. Had some different experiences. I'll never forget it with Christine Sinclair. Like, I used to go and play at Burnaby Select in the summers. She's one of the Canadian greats. And so really had a great soccer experience from a young age of just maybe not the most conventional, but being able to look at what different opportunities were out there to help me elevate my game. But yeah, played for the national team for a lot of years back home. Because the national team, obviously there are challenges with the climate there. We spent a lot of time in Florida. That was a great impetus to be able to allow us to get recruited by a lot of the American universities. I remember doing Dallas Cup and playing Sting 83 and thinking, what do they feed these kids down here? And so just different playing experiences across the country and internationally. So I went to Scotland, went to England at a very young age. And so I think all those things shape you as a player in kind of a different way. Had an unfortunate injury right before the Junior World Cup, which was being hosted in Canada. And so I broke my nose, broke my cheekbones, had a really bad concussion, was captain of the team at that particular time of the youth national team, and really doing very well in terms of like my trajectory. But unfortunately, those kinds of things happened that sidelined me for 8 weeks leading into the World Cup. I came back like really working very, very hard. 5-6 hours training a day, training with some of the semi-pro teams in Calgary, really trying to get back in. And it's not a huge, it's a big city now, but like the papers were all following me. So everybody's like, is she going to get back? And kept checking in with the coach. I was like, hey, I'm cleared, ready to come into camp. And he's, yeah, we'll get you into the next one. We're going to go with the same 18 that we've had. And so this was leading into, I had committed to go to SMU in Dallas. So this was leading into what preseason would be. And the World Cup was going to be during that August month. And then I got sidelined. I didn't get the chance to come back in. So it was the Friday before we were supposed to play a doubleheader for Brazil in my hometown. So it was supposed to be like my big foray back into, I guess, the game and being able to contribute at the national team level. And I got a call from a reporter that same Friday that's, how do you feel about being named to the taxi squad of the Canadian national team? And I'm like, need to call you back. Let me figure out what's going on here. And so instead of going to the game, I went down and into preseason at SMU. It was, I think everybody thinks nobody's journey is linear, I would say. And so I was very fortunate because I ended up coming in as the fittest freshman, as the fittest person on the team, and because I had just trained so, so much. And so that really helped set off my college career at SMU in like a really impactful way. So it ended up being a four-year starter there, had a really great, successful career at SMU. Whether it be like tournament All-Americans, different things like that. Like I was always a very good player through the years that I was there, and then wanted to go play pro the year that I graduated, but the WPS folded that year. So unfortunate, had to get a real job. We all have to do that eventually. And that's why I think the game is so important for establishing, I don't know what you would call it, but the life lessons that set kids up for success beyond the field, right? Because we know that at some point, we never know what our journey is going to be, but at some point we know that we're going to hang up our cleats. So what have we done to make sure that we're creating really great young humans as well that can impact their community and impact the work environment and impact other kids, maybe eventually one day too. So I ended up going into advertising at the Richards Group, had an opportunity and was very successful there, had an opportunity to come back and actually coach at SMU. So I coached there for about a couple of years. And then the stars aligned. I went into Sting. The owner of Sting was at an indoor soccer game with one of my old marketing professors at SMU and was saying, hey, I'm looking for a marketing person. Do you have anybody that you might have in mind? And he mentioned me and said she was the best student that I ever had. And that's where the stars aligned there. So I came in with Sting as a marketing director in 2007. And I was with them 18 years. So a really long time. We really, it was a small group of us that built the club from, I think, 12 teams in Richardson to over 350 teams in 6 markets. It's really a labor of love, really something that I think we all have still a lot of pride and ownership in, and that we're all very, very proud of, because there's not too many people that can say that they've done that in the youth soccer space. And definitely a team effort between a few of us there at Sting. So I was there 18 years, was more on the operation side. So moved from marketing director to COO for many years. And then crazy story, but it's a funny one, is my daughter's team was we lived out of the South Arlington Mansfield area. And so she had a group of kiddos that we were playing with, but they were really like a much higher level than most of the kids that were in that space. And so at the time my husband said, hey, like you're going to have to coach her team. But otherwise, we're going to be driving to Dallas 45 minutes, an hour every single day to find her something that's competitive. So I built her 2012 team, which is the Tattoo 2012 team, one of the most successful teams in the country. I think they're ranked number one, number two. And a lot of those kids, and it's crazy because a lot of those kids, we got lucky because of COVID because it allowed us to technically develop the kids in the way that we needed to because of a lot of individual time that they had with the ball. But I think there's still 8 or 9 of them that are original to the team that I started back when they were 7, and now they're 13. This is how I made my foray back onto the field. At that time, the owner of Sting was like, hey, we need you to replicate your process in terms of building and recruiting and developing the kids. And really the development piece, I think, is the most important at those young ages, is investing in what the correct fundamentals should be. So long story short, I moved in as a youth director the last couple of years that I was there. I really was responsible for trying to build the academy, which, and everything U13 and younger, so pre-ECNL and younger, in order to really turn around where the quality of the teams were, because at the time they were poor. And we needed to have, because Sting supports 2 ECNL programs, Black and Royal, we needed to have the pipeline that comes up to help feed those programs. So that was really my role as I came in last 2 years at Sting. And it was really very refreshing to get back on the field. I don't think that there's anything that beats kids. And then I got to work with a lot of the high-level kids or build the high-level teams. And that's, I think you can always take a child that's more developmental and you can really move them along. But I'm driven on a little bit of a different way. And so being able to build those groups and really hand them off to different coaches, as I was able to do that, develop the kids, work with them for 6 months to a year, that was very, very gratifying to get back on the field that way. And then fast forward to May of last year, I had the opportunity to build a private school with an investor. And so went into the project in May. I think we got in our building in July. We did, July 13th, I believe, opened the school August 13th with a lot of construction and different things that had to be done because the building was at a real estate office. Lots of logistics, lots of operational planning. So more back on the business side of things. And then really brought the school to capacity in 6 months between the time that we opened in August. Started with 26 students and finished with 52. And then I've now had this new opportunity to move in, and it's a new challenge, but it's kind of like the best of both worlds. So obviously I have my club experience on the youth side, and then now, and so that would allow me to be successful and help Impact Forms Academy on the youth side in terms of the club. Very young club, got a really cool methodology that I am like, can soccer geek out over all day. Like, I love it. Just the science, how they're doing things. I don't think anybody in the market disputes the fact that these kids at a very young age are extremely technical and they're doing something different than a lot of the clubs are. And so I've learned a lot. And then on the school side, the residency side, like, the reason I started the private school or wanted to, and the reason that I'm passionate about it, is because as I grew up, 3 to 4 weeks out of every month, I was absent from high school. I wasn't there because I was traveling with all the different youth national teams. And I wasn't in a situation where I had like that full circle support. And I remember getting to SMU and thinking, this is like almost like a professional environment. We have tutors, we've got the facilities, we've got people that are doing our training gear. Like, we've got all of these people here that are here to support us. Why not replicate that when we can mold these kids in a more impactful way? Because at the college game, it's like you're managing players. But at the youth game, man, you could do a whole lot.
It sounds like you had a good setup there.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about your playing and coaching there for a little bit more. So you got into coaching right away after playing in college? Or is that when you were working with Sting and doing the marketing? And that's when you got into coaching?
Yeah. So when I graduated college, I was working in advertising for 2 years. I think that's where you find when you work in other industries, it's not your passion. And so I ended up back, but I ended up back at the college level. So it was when I started, and I didn't start coaching with Sting for probably the first 10 to 14 years that I was there. I was more administrative. So I did marketing, operations, facilities acquisitions, all those different things. And it was only as of the last 2 years I got into coaching my daughter's team maybe 4 years before I left Sting. And then last 2 years is when I was on the field a whole lot more.
Gotcha. Yeah. No, it's definitely different because everyone has their own entry into the game. I never played the game, so
yeah.
It's always fun hearing how everyone gets into coaching and their... You covered everything I think I really wanted to cover there. I think you did a great job. Thank you. So let's talk a little bit about Alpha Forms because I don't know much. I know who they are as a club. I know who they are as in the community. So let's talk a little bit about Alpha Forms.
Yeah, so Alpha Forms Academy is the club, basically. And so they provide youth programs in the market just like any other youth program that's here. So Sting, FC Dallas, DKSC, like any of those clubs that are out there, they do the same thing. And they offer programs from like the youngest, U5, U6, all the way on up through U19. They came to market and it's an interesting story because the owner, Ron, he like is an extremely smart soccer mind, but he's also very science-based, really great with numbers and different things like that. And so he really wanted something different for his own kids. And I think that's the reason we like, just like I got into coaching again because of my daughter, right? Like it's the same thing for him. But he went into it with more of a research-based methodology and trying to come up with, like, how can we really impact these kids at a time where their bodies are, like, they're like little sponges. And so what can we do? And so he came up with a science-based methodology that, like, again, I'm not too many days into the role. And so for me, like, learning about it and learning about what they're doing on the field is really, really impactful. It's so cool to watch. And if you even go look at like Instagram and look at the way those kids move. And he's always been able to take the kid with two left feet with the big belly. And all of a sudden in 6 months, they're coordinated and they're moving in a way that I think is a miss sometimes at the younger age groups. And so for me, when we came together on this project, I always believed when I came into Sting that in that youth area, that we needed a lot more individual emphasis because there's only so much time you have with them until that technical window closes. And so for us to be able to share our ideas and me be able to learn from what he's done and then also apply what I know I've done very well in the market, it was like the perfect storm. So I have a double-edged sword or a two-headed dragon. I'm going to be doing the club side and helping organize coaches, helping manage training, helping support them. I was out there all weekend on the fields, be there to know the kids and impact them at the youth level, because I think that's really important. And then on the residency side, that's a little bit of a different animal because that is only for certain kids. In my opinion.
I don't disagree. I think it takes a special person because a residency program...
Anyways, the residency, I feel like, requires a different kind of, not pedigree, but just drive and motivation in a child. Because they're kids. They're young.
I think when there's the drive for a kid, that all they dream about is soccer. And I know it sounds horrible, but if they could... There's no, in the public school system today, there, and even private schools, there's no true overlap for them to have the opportunity to chase their dream. It is academics, then everything else. Where I feel when you have a, I would call it more of an academy program that's shaped around, a residency program, I'll use the right word that you're using, a residency program where it's shaped around both. Education's important, but so is the soccer side of the equation. I think it helps drive them to perform well in school, but also give them the release of their soccer that they are dreaming of and wanting to do. And I don't, like you said, it takes a special person to do it. And there's not a lot of kids that can do it and be successful, in my opinion, because either they struggle with school and school won't motivate them so they can go play soccer, where sometimes they have to have that internal drive where I have to do well in this schooling so I can actually go focus more on my soccer. And
yeah,
I think that's the thing that does take a special person because not everyone has that internal drive.
But what I also think is, and I see it because my son's at the school that I started in Southlake. And so I saw him go, he's an advanced kiddo, so really smart. Soccer junkie. What I'm telling you, if he's not playing, he's playing FIFA. If he's not playing FIFA, he's watching the YouTube videos. Like, he never stops. Wakes up in the morning, wants to play. But last year, I saw a change in him where he felt, I think he was just tired. Honestly, he got out of his school. It's been a long day. He'd say, Mom, can we skip practice? That's not my kid. That's not his passion. And I see something different in him. Now that he's in a hybrid situation where he gets to have the time on the fields during the day, and then he gets his academics. And I do think that his academics will ultimately be better because there's a lot of studies that show that kids that are more active during the day perform a lot higher academically in the classroom because they're not going through lines and sitting in gyms and having to do some of those things that in a larger environment is just part. There's nothing against that. It's just that's what they have to do to operate effectively. And when you're in a smaller environment, you don't necessarily have to do those things so you can maximize the time. So I've seen a huge change in him. I have to tell him, like, stop hitting the dang ball against a fireplace, go brush your teeth. You're going to play all day. And so driving that passion in the kids is, I think, important. And then my oldest daughter, so she's the goalkeeper for the tattoo team. She's on the cusp of the youth national team. She's done so many wonderful, wonderful things, right? But it's a grind. She is staying in her current traditional school environment because she has her friends. She's been there. She's an eighth grader. She wants to go into the high school experience. Like, once they start to get there and they're ingrained in their friend group, it's hard to say, hey, this may be something else you need to consider. But she gets up early and does homework, goes to school all day, gets off the field or gets out of school, goes directly to the fields and trains pretty much every night of the week. And then she does it on the weekend. And so the model is to bring balance so that the kids can go home and ride a bike or lay on the couch or just be kids in the evening because they're getting all of that technical development during the day. Does that make sense?
No, it makes perfect sense. I think, how do I describe this? When you look at most, I'm going to use FC Dallas because they have a system set up at the Frisco School District.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think what they have is great because they're done by 6:30 at night, or even Allegiance Academy. I can use another one that we all know in the DFW Metroplex. They all have the same flow. They do a little bit of soccer in the morning, they do their schooling, and they come back after school and they do the rest of their soccer training if it's with the team or whatever it may be. And then they're done. They're done by 5:30 at night, and they can go, like you said, be a kid. They can go take Taekwondo, or they could go join a swim team, or they could go do something else other than soccer. And it slows down the burnout process. I truly believe it can actually stop the burnout process because they're able to be a kid from 4:30 or 5:30 in the evening on and not worry because all their soccer training has been done.
And I think that's something that's lost on people, to be able to go do an art class or to go do language or some of those things are maybe incorporated more into a traditional school day, but you could probably attack those in a more meaningful way because it would be more individualized. If you were doing some of those outside activities, once they get done with their schooling for the day. But I also think that the smaller classroom sizes, the tailored curriculum, the ability. So I'll give you an example. Like, my daughter was in Chula Vista at the ID2 stuff, and she missed an entire week of school, basically. So then she comes back to a boatload of work that she has to do. Whereas, like, what we've tailored the program where the younger ones have certified teachers that work with them in person, because developmentally, that's what they need. They need that person that's going to guide them. They need that in-person instruction, all of those different things. But for the older ones, we have an online curriculum that we still have teacher-led instruction, but at the same time, and proctors that help them move through their curriculum. But if they're gone for a week, if they don't want to come on a Monday because they had ECNL games all weekend or they traveled, they don't have to because they're not going to fall behind. And that is Yeah, especially when you get to like U13 and older, where we start to see more of those travel platforms, the ability for the child to have an in-person leader that's going to guide them through their curriculum and make sure that they stay on task, but then also the ability for them to have flexibility in their school day, attendance-wise, ability to move forward in programming, because a lot of these kids are very driven, meaning that they can get ahead. So there's so many different aspects to it that I think a lot of us who grew up playing a high level at a young age wish we would have had. I would have loved to have been able to log in and just get my lessons done for the next 2 weeks.
I think I read somewhere the average school day is what, 6.5, 7.5 hours, I think it is.
Yeah, depending.
And I think they can finish the whole school day if it's just one student doing like homeschooling style, where there's not all the distractions and everything, in less than 3.5 hours.
Yeah.
And when we really apply that, and you take those other three hours, give them a half hour for lunch in there, and apply it to an activity they're doing, you're going to get so much more out of these kids. And then when they're able to escape and go do their own thing, I think they're going to be more successful.
Yeah, and I think the active piece of it, we all know this. If I go for a run before I start my work day, I have a better work day because all of the positive effects of exercise allow us to be more engaged, efficient, and academically effective too. And that's why, like they say, like the research shows that the kids that are more active get more done. And so that 30 minutes of recess is probably not enough, but again, the model is not for everyone. And the schools that we have, whether it's private or public, those parents, those teachers, everybody who contributes, the administrative staff, they're amazing. I see it with my other kids. I have twin boys. One's in a traditional school. One's in a soccer school. There's a lot of comparison pieces. It's not right for one, but it is right for the other. And so you can't necessarily say that, I don't know that I wouldn't call it time wasted. I wouldn't want to say that because I think that like our teachers and like the people that work with our kids are like seriously their heroes, just like coaches, no matter what environment that they're in. But I do think that there are certain kids where it's just not a fit for them because of how they're made up.
How do I describe this? Being politically correct saying it. I understand exactly what you're saying. Every setting has a different place for everyone. Some kids that are more, I call it the more social butterflies, would probably more accelerate in public schools because they have the option to be social throughout the day. And then on top of everything else, they have the chance to be who they are. And I don't think we get enough of those moments for kids. I'm going to use my son. My son has always struggled with making friends at school. If they don't talk soccer, he struggles making good friends.
Yeah.
And on the other side of that is that my son is more used to talking to kids that are on his team than at his school, because I honestly feel like he spends more quality time with the kids on his soccer team than he does his school. So when you have a residency program, and that's my question I'm going to lead up here with this, do they have where it's a lot of the same kids that are playing on the same teams in every age group that are, or is it just kids that want to go to a soccer school and they aren't part of Alpha Forms?
Yeah. So now in the upper, which they just started out of the Star Center in Frisco as of this past year. And by the way, who would not want to be in that environment? You're with the Cowboys. You're with every top college athlete. Like when you go down to the turf there, whew. Just to even see some of the other multi-sport athletes train is inspiring in and of itself. And so those are our older ones that are out of the Star, EPT at the Star, Elite Performance Training, which is the company that actually provides a lot of services for the kids through the week. So they do strength training for them. They do recovery services for them. And then the kids are out of that facility 100% of the time. So if we're going to talk like in the upper, 90% of those kids play on different clubs. And it is, I think what I would call it is the perfect storm. Alpha has always been, Forms has always been really known for creating, number one, great coordinated athletes that can really move, but then technically special players. And so then when you take that and then you translate it into the team environment, okay, then those kids go into their team environment and they impact the game in a different way. And they get a different voice there with different concepts. And so they're getting so much information in a day, whether it be what they're doing individually, because we're not training a team there. So it is individual training, and it's making the individual the best that they can be to contribute to whatever team environment they're going to be in.
So is the residency program non-club affiliate then?
No. So in upper, it never was. This year in primary, we've gone to the same model. So the kids, and in the past, what happened was if you were in residency in primary, then you needed to filter into one of the alpha teams at a young age. Now we've moved it to where it is club agnostic and the kids can play for whatever team that they choose. And I think that's important because I think every parent needs their choices. Of course, because I'm managing the club side, I would want them in the club because then we can continue to monitor their development in a more meaningful way through rostering in games, practices, residency, all of those different pieces. But that's not right for everybody. That's not right based on the options we have in every age group, and it may not be right for them in terms of logistics or any of the other different things that parents face when they make choice or coaches or level of team. Those are all things that parents consider as they're getting their kids into youth sports.
I think it's really hard for a lot of parents to fully understand because it has Alpha Form residency in it. And that's why I was asking the question, because it's presented from Alpha Forms, but it's open to the general public. Now, do you see that, how to describe it, that being a club agnostic is a benefit for the athletes, or do you think it's somewhat of a hindrance? And I'm looking at it from my perspective is that if these kids aren't playing together, and I hate to say this, if you have a top player kid playing on one team and he's getting all this extra soccer training and all his extra touches, they are farther ahead than the kids in their own age group at times. And even playing up, it won't matter because they might not have the same chemistry as the kids they train with however many hours a day. We haven't got to the structure of the school yet, but yeah. However many hours a day. Do you think that will be helpful for them to be playing with more of these kids up there together? Or do you think being club agnostic is more for the benefit of the families because we don't have that traditional system here in the United States, and this gives the opportunity for them to focus on the individual player to give them the growth they need to advance themselves?
Yeah, gosh, the way that I would answer that is I think that the kids during the day develop a chemistry and a camaraderie that allows them to performance-wise excel. Because some of the worst, gosh, think about going into a tryout, right? And you're nervous. You go in, you're nervous, you don't know what to expect. You look and there's 100 kids around you. Like, that is typical in terms of as they start to get to ECNL and different things like that. These kids have a level of comfort with each other that they're able, it's a safe spot for them to train.
Right.
There's no pressure. There's no parents. It's development focused. And in North Texas, that's pretty darn rare. So I think that environment in and of itself, then you combine that with professional facilities, recovery, strength and conditioning, science-based methodology. Like, you're creating a truly developmental environment. Okay. Now, when you bring in the youth side, inevitably you bring in the competitive aspect of things. And guess what? We all want to win. I don't want a player that comes in and is just, oh, I want the players to come in and say, hey, I want to do my best. It's okay if we don't win. We have to show attitude. We have to show effort. We have to show all the winning qualities that might not help us win that game, but will help us win eventually. But in the youth game, there's so much pressure on these kids. We're the only market that has 5 ECNL clubs. Think about what that creates in terms of the league structure, in terms of the youth. These teams play each other all the time. I can't tell you how many times I've watched the same matchups in every single age group. We know all the kids. We know the coaches. It really just depends on who shows up on a better day. But that structure is great on the competitive side, but they miss the developmental side because they're not getting that time, meaningful time, not an hour and a half, two times a week, to really be in a structure where they feel like developmentally they can focus. And so for me, like going back to your question, I think it's a long way to get there, but I don't know that we would ever want our kids, outside of going on international tours and experiencing culture and getting to play together in different environments, we want them to have the diversity of the experience. Because it helps develop them as, in a more holistic sense. Yeah, they do have to feel pressure in a game. But at least we're developing them to prepare for it. And they get that space where they're not, I don't know, like having to score the winning goal and then in the last 30 seconds with the whole sidelines going crazy. So then we prepare them for it in a developmental way. And then when they get out there, guess what? Probably going to be successful because they've done it day in and day out in training in a safe environment with people that they trust and players that they trust, because that's who their schoolmates are. So it's, to me, it's like, it's the best of both worlds.
And we haven't touched on much of the schooling yet. So to me, it's really hard. I look at my kid and I know what he wants. And I know that a lot of residency programs over in Europe are just that. They have a school, you go play with your club, you train with your club, and then you come back to the residency and I call it more of a college lifestyle. Earlier in life, they go over and they train with the residency program and then they go train with their club.
Today's conversation with Aaron Medina really highlighted how much of youth soccer is still focused on the wrong things and why individual development, time on the ball, and the right environment matters more than anything else. If you're a parent, coach, or player, this is one of those conversations that make you take a step back and rethink what development actually looks like day to day. Big thanks to Aaron for joining me today.
If you guys have enjoyed this podcast, have enjoyed what I've been trying to do, the messages that I'm putting out there, please give me some ratings, some stars on all the podcast sites that you listen to this on. Give me a review, share this, share with others. The more I can make this grow, the more I can continue doing this. I'm really trying to make a difference in our soccer community. So I hope you guys have enjoyed all this. And until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.